Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of New Money with Spencer and Solo. I'm Solo Cisse, and today we're going to be talking to quite possibly the busiest man in America. We are going to be talking to the most recent bachelor, Matt James. And quite honestly, he has a lot in common, a little bit more than you might think, with my co-host Spencer here. So again, thank you for joining us today, and we hope you enjoy the show.
What's up, everybody? This is Spencer Dinwiddie.
And I'm Solo Cisse.
And this is New Money, brought to you by CoinDesk. And we have a very special guest here today, the man, the myth, the legend himself.
Ooh,
Matt James, The Bachelor, aka The Bachelor. And so I'm going to start it off. Who is Matt James?
That's a good question, man. Matt James is a risk taker. Okay. All my life, I feel like I've gotten to where I've gotten to by doing things that other people wouldn't do. And that's typically involved putting myself in situations that could make or break me. You know, moving to New York City without a job, moving across the country into an industry that I had no idea about. Exactly, going on TV, putting my life out there. Yeah. So that's how I've seen the most personal growth. And I would boil all that into being a risk taker. So I consider myself and my ethos risk taking.
Got you.
And that doesn't necessarily mean like I'm jumping off a building. I would if it was like, you know, I had a parachute or something fun to do, but like
I would not.
Yeah, that's not me.
Not me. Risk taker.
I mean, I know they have some other questions that are more boring in my sense, but one passion that we do have that is in the risk taking realm, Bitcoin, obviously. We're on CoinDesk.
Yes, sir.
So in that respect, tell me how you got into Bitcoin.
So my Bitcoin story, I think everyone has like some sort of like, so like, how'd you get into Bitcoin? Because it's like, I feel weird. Like if someone's not into crypto, then it's like asking someone if they smoke. Bear with me. It's like you're at a party and like, you smoke? And like, nah, I don't smoke. Like, all right, cool. And then someone's like, you smoke? It's like, yes. Oh, yeah, bad. Like,
now you know you're best friend.
Exactly. Yeah. So I use that analogy with Bitcoin. It's like, you into crypto? And they're like, nah, then like, there's really nothing to talk about because they're like, this guy's crazy, like whatever. But if someone's like, yeah, like I'm into crypto, it's like, oh, bet. So like, what are you invested in?
Yeah. Yeah.
And having those type of conversations in social settings has become a norm now.
Yeah.
So like, you asked me how I got into crypto. I was at a party with a bunch of my friends from college.
Yeah.
And one of these kids that I knew was into crypto just because like word of mouth, he had quit his job. He had gotten into crypto at the ground level. Yeah. So I go up to him. Yeah, it was one of those. Yeah, so I'm like, you into crypto? And he's like, I'm into crypto. You into crypto? I'm like, yeah. And then like, he was like, he thought I was like messing with him. Because like everyone jokes with him and no one takes it serious.
Yeah.
But we sat down and talked for like 3 hours and he talked about his account he had. How he traded, how he leveraged, bought XYZ and talked about altcoins. Like we went through the whole gamut. Like I got a crash course that night. And like by the end of the night, I'm like, I didn't have my ID at the time and you need your ID to set up.
Set up your trading account.
I'm like, how do we do this? He's like, calm down. Like it'll be there tomorrow. Yeah. And then like, I'm texting him like, Bitcoin just went up 1,000. Like I'm out. Like, you know what I mean? Like I need to. I'm out in a sense of like I'm out of potential gains. Right.
Oh, so
I'm
trust like, me, we all played the speculation.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, and then like when I finally got set up on the account, Bitcoin was up $5,000. I'm like, bro, like I'm losing money. Like we need to get in there now. And, you know, as people who are invested, you know, it ebbs and flows.
It's crazy because, like, everybody has those sort of aha moments, right? Like, because, like, to your point, like, even the first time, like, we all chatted crypto, it was one of those, like, oh, my God, like, he's one of us type moments, right? Because, like, you just feel like such an outsider. Like, I mean, he got laughed at.
Hey, trust me. I was in the league getting laughed at since 2017. So, like, you know, when you find somebody, especially, obviously, like, you know, on that same type of level, wavelength, all that stuff. And I'm like, you know, you in the crypto, you know,
right, exactly.
Bitcoin, altcoin, where you at with
it? Right, exactly.
You like, yeah, bro. I'm like, it's crazy though, because
you just talk about the random things, right? Like you talk about like life, right? Like went to go buy a car the other day. And the fact that like I had to go to the bank and the bank was closed and the bank's just closed, right?
Right.
Like that's a problem, right? But at the same time, like I should be able to, you know, send you money as easy as a text message, right? And like people don't understand that because it's just like so incomprehensible,
right?
And like the way that we've lived our lives. So it's like whenever you find somebody that's on the same wave, then it's like, oh, like now we're talking, right?
Right.
Like, stuff like that.
We have a slightly more condensed podcast, so I'm actually going to ask you a question too. You know, when we look at crypto, obviously we've all gotten into that, but we also have kind of previous investing careers. I know yours is real estate. You were on Wall Street, with a lot of people probably don't know.
Yeah.
So could you guys compare those industries?
Yeah. I mean, I think from my side of things, you know, Wall Street and legacy markets and things like that is just so, you know, by the book, right? Like everything is by the book. So like when you even think about crypto, it's like, you know, people at investment banks obviously have resources to everything, right? So like we've been known about the technology for a long period of time, but it wasn't until you brought it to me that it was something I really took as serious, right? Yeah. And so like when you just think about these things and you have this by the book world, probably, you know, somewhat legacy real estate is like that too in a way. Which, by the way, there's so much impact that like crypto and blockchain technology can do to affect that world as well. So we'll probably get into that at some point. But it's one of those things where like you're looked at as that weird guy. Like in a sense, like you're looked at as crazy. You're like, oh, do you really believe that the banking system shouldn't exist as structured? Like, what?
Right.
People are going to look at you some type of way. And so it's quite crazy like that. And I think that's probably what kept me out of it personally longer than I needed to. But then I kept seeing it over and over again, like all these different reasons, right? Like, why should digital, you know, collectibles not be a thing? Like, how can you make this easier?
Right.
Like, how can you verify these things a lot easier? And how can you have a trustless trust layer? And like, how can you have a society built around that? Right.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, from my perspective, it was eye opening to so many degrees.
I think Sol brought up an interesting point. So like when you said that I didn't take it serious until Spencer brought it to you, I think that's a representation of where we're at for the next generation, because for the students that we work with, you know, I work with underprivileged youth in New York City.
Yep.
A lot of them hadn't heard about crypto until rappers are talking about it.
For sure.
Yeah.
And the fact that that's the trickle down is what it is, but it's a step in the right direction that people in their communities are talking about things that they need to be invested in. And even more so on that point, you took it serious when Spencer brought it to you because you respect Spencer. And people of color who were talking about something and trying to be trailblazers in an industry that, you know, we're not going to get a lot of respect from. It's not until you have a Paul Tudor Jones, who's one of the biggest hedge fund managers in the world, saying that you need to have a 5% allocation of your assets in Bitcoin, or that's the position he's going to take.
Yeah.
And 5% of billions is a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it's like, are you like, why are you taking it serious when it's coming from him, when Spencer's been talking about it since?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's crazy because if you think about it, it's kind of like allegorical in a way, because you just think about how, like, you know, in a society, like, we trust things. Like, it's very hard for us to not trust, like, not to be able to point to some entity or person and trust them, right? Like, that's just like a luxury that you have in the developed world, right? But I can tell you right now, you go back to, you know, West Africa, you go back to these other countries and some of these of the undeveloped world in some ways. And like, there's tons of applications for like this technology, right? Like, cause you don't, and like those people tend to be like, Nigeria is like second largest trader of crypto, right? Like they're big in the crypto, right?
Right.
And obviously you have those, you know, you're Nigerian as well. And so like, I think from that perspective, you just see like, you know, how like it takes that time, right? Before people start to like really engage into the technology. And so like it's just crazy in that way, because we just have grown as a society where we trust things, right? And it's hard to not trust this identifiable thing, because the blockchain's not that, right? Like it's everybody.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yeah, and with that being said, I will take the moment to actually plug CoinDesk. Look directly in the camera. New Money, brought to you by CoinDesk. And I would like to say, you know, thank you. This is not a, you know, rap by any means, but for us doing our part. I mean, just by being on here, like, think about it. The credibility that you bring, not Paul Tudor Jones, obviously, but, you know what I'm saying, literally on Wall Street, one of the youngest people doing it, a Wharton Business School grad. A lot of people don't know that. I mean, a lot of times you're obviously co-hosting and all this other stuff on this podcast, but you are a rock star in your own right. And obviously you as well have an extreme brand following. You're a risk taker. You know, people look up to you, follow you.
Look
to you for guidance. Oh, an epic beard.
Epic beard.
You know what I mean? And we're all sitting here talking to the next generation, like you said, about a technology that can be transformative. I did want to pause in the action just a little bit to say thank you. Now we can continue. Sorry.
Yeah. But even to dive even deeper into that point, like, there hasn't been platforms created by people of color for people of color.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're making that available to everybody through what you're doing, like, I don't even think we realize the magnitude of that.
Oh, absolutely.
The way that you're gonna make the idea of...
You're bringing the blockchain to pop culture.
Your mainstream crypto.
Yeah.
And you're doing things, you're buying tokens, you're exchanging them for goods and services. You're doing things that you would be doing on a Binance. You would be doing things you do on a CoinDesk, but you're doing it on an app that is exchanging for, you know, your favorite creator, athlete, entertainer services. And when you make that application in that form, I think that as, you know, you have young adapters on the app, you have middle age, you have elderly people going there for these services that are provided, when they go on to the next phase of their experimentation into the space, it's going to be, oh yeah, well, I've done natural. This before. It's not like you're seeing something for the first time.
You're bringing it to them in a language they can understand. Right? Right. Like, that's at the end of the day, I think that's kind of like the problem with crypto right now, is it's like, you know, this bespoke thing that if you want to take the time to figure out makes a lot of sense. Right. Yeah. But like, there's no easy way to go about doing that. And so like, you know, with like, you know, with Spencer and I's app and stuff like that, obviously, you know, and things like Dapper Labs and what they've been doing with Top Shot and stuff, you're taking things that people know. Like, people love Matt James. They love Spencer. Kind of like me. Not really. Right? But like, they like things too and all this stuff, right? Like, you find a way to like put that type of stuff on the blockchain, people are going to want to learn to find out. And that's how you kind of bring that stuff to pop culture. You bring it stuff to the entertainment industry and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of what it's going to take to go to that next level where you like, you start to see that adoption, right?
I know.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, that's something that we've talked about a lot, like making Web3 feel very Web2. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Decreasing friction to adoption, decreasing friction in the education process, decreasing friction from, you know, our fans to our favorite creators, right? Like, it's all about removing. I mean, we are an intermediary, which is, you know what I'm saying, kind of tongue in cheek, but we're trying to remove intermediaries. And that's kind of what we see as the premise in crypto in general, especially Bitcoin. You know what I'm saying? The unbanked. And giving them a store of value that has a potential for asymmetrical yield that they can't see in any probably non-VC investment.
Yeah,
and we know that all VC investments have the accredited VC investor law.
Yeah. So, right, exactly.
You know, I know you know this, but this is something that, and obviously you as well, that I think is so asinine because, you know, I guess if there was like some test or something that you could study for, then maybe I could vibe with it, right? But they told me at 20 years old, that I all of a sudden was an astute investor because I was really good at bouncing the ball. So I made $1 million or however much it was I needed to make at the time. And so I could get into any VC deal in the world as a 20-year-old, you know what I'm saying, college dropout technically. right? There are you know, geniuses that have, you know, gotten master's degrees and PhDs and all that other stuff that don't have the opportunity for asymmetrical yield, and they're hundreds of thousands of dollars in college debt that are smarter than me, you know what I mean? Yeah, but yeah. would never have access to it, but because I can... And don't get me wrong, I'm not stupid.
He's a smart guy.
I'm not stupid, guys.
Trust me.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But you know, it just is what it is. Like I also feel like I'm a realist too. There are people out there that obviously are more intelligent and won't have the access. But I was lucky to be 6'6", 220 pounds, and shoot a ball well.
Man, it was like what, 6'2", a couple of days ago.
I'll give him a little
6'2". Y'all play with me.
No, that's true. Like, I mean, I think even at that point, like, right, both of you guys have NFT drops. Like, Spencer actually just dropped his yesterday with the sneaker collection Passion Project as well. Nice to see that bringing that to the blockchain. You know, obviously you as well in the space. So, like, talk to us about that process. Like, what do you think, you know, like, what do you think the NFT market's going to look like in the future? Obviously, you know, you as well, but like, how was that process, and like, how did it come about?
I think the thing that was most interesting to me about the NFT space was how you could digitally make a one-of-one copy.
Yeah.
And kind of what you all, actually everything that you all unlocked in your app is utility. Yeah. You know, the tokens that you buy give you real utility.
There you go.
And the future of an NFT, I don't think is an art piece. I think it's a utility. Yeah. I think that you're going to have sports teams that are going to make their season tickets NFTs. Sure. I think you're going to have Rolling Loud and other
gaming
concerts
as well. You own this NFT.
They're going to make their concert pass an NFT, and they're going to incentivize people to go into the secondary market of sales because in perpetuity, they're going to make money on it. So I think you're going to see a lot of that, like the utility of the NFT. So like, if you're not comfortable investing in like a, I don't know, like a Micah Johnson, a coup piece, like, then you can invest in the platform that supports the NFT, like, because I don't think it's going anywhere. And I think that they've been around for a while. We're just now unlocking, like we said, the utility. And as people find more utility for them, then you're going to see more things that you're going to see commercial brands making their advertising NFTs. They're going to have like,
Everything can.
The possibilities are endless. The cans, the sneakers, the cereal boxes. You could mint an NFT for practically anything.
Yeah.
And as they continue to unlock the ways to make it profitable, you're just going to see more and more of it.
I mean, I think what's interesting too is like everybody here is nobody's strangers to like securities laws or like everybody's a finance person in some degree. Right? You securitize your contract. Yep. Like you worked in real estate. Yep. Sure, you did some stuff in structured products. I was a securitization banker. Like, I mean, I guess it's too is like when you think about that utility aspect. Like, I think one of the only things that's kind of like a stopper is that, you know, the SEC and like, you know, like that clarity and like that utility argument makes it a lot easier for that market to exist. Right. Like when you think things are just pure, if there's no utility and you're buying things and trading them, like as we've seen, right, like it can create that sort of, are you buying this for the excitation of profit? Like, is that actually something that's worth having? And so like, to your point, like, you know, I think that's what's going to help it show up everywhere.
And like you guys are saying, just to piggyback again, I mean, I think that's where, you know, when you dive into the educational process of it, like you start to separate Bitcoin from the other like altcoins, right?
Yeah.
Because this is where you start to get, okay, currency / store of value, right? Versus like utility coin. Like it's designed to do specific things, but not necessarily buy you bread.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So,
it can,
you know,
but
in a roundabout way, it's definitely kind of, there's kind of this separation. And so as you dive in, and I know some people are complete maximalists in which they say like, you know, the rest of the technology and all the other coins are BS. Now, as currencies, yeah, I'm rolling with you. But I think there's a utility and an education process that is fair in its own right, that's good for the broader crypto realm. And then you also have Bitcoin, though, that kind of stands alone and it's like store of value, capability or standing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's another thing I wanted to kind of throw out there for the viewers. Just not investment advice. Sorry, not a financial advisor. No disclaimer.
Disclaimer.
Money brought to you by CoinDesk.
You have received no financial advice.
You have received no financial advice on this podcast.
Invest at your own risk.
Well, I don't think people realize that Spencer just gave a master's class in crypto in about 30 seconds. Like everything everything you just talked about is the essence of crypto, because I don't think people take enough time to really distinguish what it is that they're talking about when they're talking about an altcoin or Bitcoin, because they, like you said, their utility values are completely different. If you're looking for something that is going to be a hedge against inflation, is going to be something that is going to be a store of value in the long term, then you're not going to be so in the weeds about the short term
volatility
in Bitcoin.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whereas if you're someone who is
trading meme coins
and you're looking for something that is, you know, gonna make you an overnight success story, you're going to have a lot of sleepless nights, and that's the utility that you're looking for in that coin. Like you can easily exchange that for goods and services. And I think that the craziest thing that people don't realize is people who aren't adapters into the crypto, there's already a derived value. Like, like whether it be a, let's say what, I don't know what Doge is at. Let's say it's at 30 cents. Like someone will pay you 30 cents for that. Like
For sure. Somebody out there will.
Someone out there will give you 30 cents for this digital currency.
There's
so
a market.
There is a market for it. Yeah. So just because it's hard to conceptualize for you doesn't mean that
it doesn't,
the ecosystem isn't evolving. Yeah. And I'm reminded of it when I'm seeing, you know, Jamie Dimon, Goldman Sachs CEO, all these big time investment firms talking about their wealth management teams having this high level interest in the crypto space.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's only a matter of time before, you know, we're not the crazy people anymore.
For sure. Yeah. And I think that's interesting in the next point too, is right. Like you personally, obviously everybody knows on the show, we have Matt James here, right? Bachelor, you have two very distinct paths. Well, probably a lot more other things. I'm sure you do a lot of other things that talk about Bitcoin. Also do reality TV, right?
So
like what kind of, you know, it seems like you've committed very deeply to like wanting to explore this path of crypto and like making a very big part of whatever you spend a lot of your time doing. Like kind of talk about kind of, you know, the options that you see in front of you and kind of where do you think Matt James goes, right? Like you could have very well been like, you know what? I want to get into being an influencer, being an actor, being like into that entertainment industry purely as that. But it seems like you've taken a path a little bit differently than some people might have asked. So like kind of talking about that, like where do you see yourself going?
I'll put it like this. I feel like every rapper wants to be a basketball player, hooper, athlete, and every athlete wants to be an artist, right?
Yeah,
so like anyone who thinks that like I want to be the Paul Tudor Jones, you know, I want to be the Micah Johnson who's creating these NFTs. Like I want to be a creator. I want to be an innovator. I want to do things that I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
And like how that's come across in the past 6 months is, you know, everything hydroponic farming, everything around crypto education for our students, because, you know, they're the ones who are going to be adapting and building out the infrastructure that we're talking about today. And the risk that I took on going on this show, you know, awarded me a lot of opportunities, and it brought me a relationship. It brought me clarity in my personal life. It brought me a lot of things. And one of the big things is opportunity, and doing so, it's like you can pursue the things that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think a lot of people work jobs as a means to an end. You know, it's like when I reach this point, like I'm going to, and I was in that position, you know, and I think a lot of people are in that position. And I'm telling you, when you that point is going to continue to go this way, continue to go that way. Like, you're never going to reach that point.
It's going to be. I think Western world, to your point, like, they kind of live to work. And then if you explore some Eastern culture, sometimes they work to live. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, they take more vacations. It's a much different, you know what I'm saying, just, like, thought process. And you said something interesting, which a lot of athletes will agree with in terms of each wanting to be the flip-flop. Well, obviously, you know, for athletes, like, We love the freedom that we see, right?
Right,
like,
exactly.
You can go out to the club and have a million tattoos or do whatever and wild stuff, and there's no really repercussion because you're an artist and expressing your creativity, right?
Yep.
Whereas an artist is like, man, I want the real money.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, hey, this is all fun and good, but all I got is a watch. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, it's different. So you take the good with the bad, but it was interesting to hear you talk about how the show provides you clarity, especially in your personal life and things like that. So that's really dope. And with that being said, did you think that was going to be what you found on the show?
Hell no. No chance. That's the last thing I thought I was going to find. You know, I went in there first and foremost with an open mind. I'm like, you have to be open to the idea that you could leave there engaged. And I very much was, because I wasn't in a relationship and I felt like I was ready for that. And that same mindset going forward is like, I'm open-minded in the sense that when I hear new information, my ideals change. And when I'm presented new information in terms of how to farm, how to be a better person, what the future of money looks like going forward, being open-minded and being a risk taker are things that, you know, have brought me onto this couch with you all, you know? Yeah. I try to take that mentality into everything that I do. And when I think about it, how do I take something that I'm passionate about and make it my own? And I keep harping on the education around the youth and having them understand that when is it that we're at the ground floor of innovation? Yeah. I think of the internet. I think
it's literally once in a lifetime opportunity.
Once in a lifetime opportunity.
Like very few.
And if I think it's our responsibility to bridge that gap, being people of color coming from these neighborhoods, because if we're not going to do it, who's going to do it? Yeah. You know, it's not in their curriculum. And I think being a good steward of this information also means doing your research, you know. Yeah. A lot of the conversations I have with people about crypto is how environmentally bad it is for the environment. Yeah. And then I point them to the Bitcoin Mining Commission and the Bitcoin Mining Council that was put together by Michael Saylor and a bunch of other people who are big Bitcoin maximalists, I would put it. And they did the research. You know, they looked at the hash power, which is where the mining energy is concentrated. And an overwhelming majority of that energy is sustainable. You know, if it's hydro, if it's solar.
Yeah.
The biggest win, I think, for the Bitcoin community was when China decided to put a ban on the mining, because a lot of the mining they were doing was using coal. And it's inexpensive, but it's also horrible for the environment.
Yeah.
So it's just educating yourself.
Yeah, you got to think about, too, like, there's so many political agendas, too. Like, even when it comes to, you know, obviously China, right? Like, a lot of it is, you know, the way in which you get to a decentralized world from a world where you have full control is a process, right?
Sure.
Like, that's going to take time. Like, people aren't going to embrace that technology, right? So I think it's that, too. And then to your point, right, like, doing your research, right? Like, you know, I think what sucks about crypto at this point in time is that, like, you know, there's a lot of people that are, you know, just understand the surface level of it that are viewed as thought leaders because of the previous lives they've had, right?
Right.
Like, just like Spencer has said, right? Like, I'm an accredited investor because now I'm sophisticated because I have money in my bank account because I'm good at playing basketball, right? Like, that same aspect, right? Like, we have people that are pillars of our society, not to name names, right? But, like, they're commenting on these things about, like, you know, have very big price action, right? Like, there's a lot of different reasons why somebody might say that. But, you know, to your point, right, doing your research, right, there are other chains out there. Like, Bitcoin makes sense, right, as a store of value. Does it make sense to build something like what we're building on, like a proof of work protocol? Does that make sense for what we're building? No,
right?
But, like, it may make sense for certain things, right, when you're thinking about security and being the, you know, the prime thing, right? Because at the end of the day, it's speed and security, right? Like, it's a trade-off between the two.
Right.
And then obviously energy has impact on that. So it's just, you know, to your point, like, the research aspect is just critical.
Yeah. And then, you know, lastly, because I know we're coming tight on time, you said something that I think is a great takeaway, right? You talked about an open mind. I think that's something that, you know, when you look at life, new technologies, whether it's farming, crypto, personal life, whatever it is, like, having that open mind, having that flexibility doesn't necessarily mean that you're not resolute either. You know what I'm saying? Because we all have, like, our moral stance and things, but it just allows you to be of so much more service to, you know what I'm saying, youth or society in general.
Sure.
You know what I mean? The more you learn, the more adaptable you are, the more you can be receptive to information, other cultures. I mean, sometimes I think we just get stuck in such a silo, right?
Sure.
That we end up not being of service because we're so closed off. But, you know, I think if there's, I know we kind of geeked out on crypto the entire time and didn't get into too much other stuff, but if there's one other thing that I think the viewers take away, it's just that comment about open mind. I really, really genuinely respected that. And I think that's how young leaders honestly, even oldies, all people in general, color, not color, like, having that open mind allows you to be in a position to be of service. And at the end of the day, the most impactful thing any of us can do is to truly be of service to our fellow human beings. You know, I mean, that's how we all get better. And the barriers and walls that we want to break down, like, the only way it's going to happen is together, as cliche and corny and whatever you want to call it as it sounds. But that's truly something, and that thought came to me when you said it. So,
of course. The open mindedness is, like, my favorite analogy I like to bring to someone who, you know, is kind of closed off in the ways that they think about things socially, politically, whatever, is thinking about a weatherman. At the beginning of the week, the weatherman makes predictions on the weather. And to the best of his knowledge at that time, he is going to tell you that, you know, based off what I know today, it should rain on Friday. There's a 100% chance it's going to rain.
Yeah.
When he checks that Doppler radar on Thursday and he sees that it's not going to rain on Friday,
he's going to tell you.
He's going to tell you.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you want him to give you an updated analogy on what he thinks the weather's going to do based on the new information? Or is it going to be like, no, since I said it was going to rain, it's still going to rain. It's like, no, you have new information. It's okay to change the way you think about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a perfect analogy. That's a perfect thing to, I think, end on. And so, you know, with that being said, thank you, Matt James, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
My man, I appreciate you.
Boss. Always a pleasure.
And again, this is New Money brought to you by CoinDesk. This is Spencer Dinwiddie, Solo Cisse, and Matt James signing off. Thank you.